This is last Freestyle Sunday. So we're going to jump into a series on the Sermon on the Mount. I got a few suggestions over the last several weeks on direction. One is giving, and we're going to get to that too. But we're going to do a series on the Sermon on the Mount. Interestingly enough, we've really not spent a ton of time looking at that, which is crazy to me because, I don't know, it's Jesus talking. So we probably should spend a little bit of time on the Sermon on the Mount. So be ready for that. But this morning, I kind of want to build on something. You guys have heard me reference how watching The Chosen has really given me a picture, and it's interpretive to a degree, of how things may have looked or played out during Jesus' ministry. But it's really kind of heightened my awareness of some of the events, and I've researched some of the events. Because as they portray them, I'm like, huh, that's an interesting portrayal. But then as I've gone back and researched some of those portrayals, I've seen where they get that information from. So turn to Matthew chapter 13 this morning. Now, we've heard this text before, but I want to kind of place it in a little bit different spot this morning, because I'm going to challenge us this morning. Because I think a good challenge every now and then is probably worthwhile. What do you think, Harvey? You think a good challenge is worth it sometimes? So in verse 13 of chapter 16, if you have headings in your Bible, which I don't super like all the headings, but it says, "Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, 'Who do people say that the Son of Man is?'" You guys have heard me talk over the years. I can say years now, because working on the sixth year preaching here. You guys have heard me say that we sometimes so easily misidentify the Messiah, the intention of Jesus. And so as I look back at this text, the disciples have been hanging with Jesus. They've been watching him. They've been going from town to town. They've been listening to him teach. They've been watching him do miracles. They've been doing all of these incredible things and witnessing all of these incredible things. And just like anybody in life, you kind of build who they are. In your existence, you build people into an identity based on experience, right? You see maybe Kevin doing this, and you're like, okay, all right, there's a little edge of Kevin. And then you see Kevin doing this, and there's another little edge of Kevin. And then, oops, Kevin, I saw him do this. And then there's this edge of Kevin. And so over time, we build this identity. And so what I want you guys to see is that over the course of Jesus' ministry, this identity of who he is getting shaped. But unfortunately, so many times, we shape things into our perspective. And sometimes we miss the intended perspective. And so it kind of comes to this place in Matthew chapter 13 where Jesus takes them somewhere. And here's the interesting aspect of this. He takes them to Caesarea Philippi. And just some historical around this place. This is a rough spot. Caesarea Philippi is not where you want to be. Especially if you're a Jew. There is a multitude of pagan worship that happens in Caesarea. It is considered the gates of hell. And so I want you to envision that Jesus takes them out of this place of comfort where his message is growing and manifesting itself into a spot, into a location where evil is present. And it's not only present, it's like dominating. And so I want you to picture, if you will, that Jesus goes to this location. He's standing in the presence of darkness. And that's where he asks this question. Who do people say that I am? As he has surrounded himself, he has postured himself in amongst a multitude of gods. So think about that for just a second. That's where Jesus takes his disciples to ask. So modern day, it'd be like leaving here this morning and driving to New Orleans and standing on Bourbon Street and saying, "Who do you say that Jesus is?" with a bunch of people watching. Oh, let's add on Mardi Gras. Is that uncomfortable? I want you to think about the setting, because Jesus has placed not only his disciples but himself in this place where it's not shades of gray, it's black and white. Evil presides here. And in the midst of that, he is asking his disciples to make a proclamation of who he is. And how scary that must have been in that place. And for Peter to say, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." I want you to hear that proclamation that Peter makes in this moment. Now, oddly enough, if you keep reading this chapter, the next little heading section, let's actually just mention that. The heading says, Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. Now, we know that Jesus did this on three different occasions with his disciples, but from the time Jesus began, verse 21, to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and to be killed, and on the third day be raised, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." Whoa! I mean, from one extreme to the next. In this moment at Caesarea Philippi, he's probably like, "Man, Peter, you got it. You get it. This wasn't revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by God alone, that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God." The very next scene that we see is Jesus proclaiming his death, his burial, and his resurrection. And in this proclamation, Peter hooks an arm around him and says, "Hey, let's go ahead over here in the corner and have a conversation. You got to quit talking like that. You got to quit saying weird stuff like that, that you're going to die. Surely, my vision of you is that that can't possibly happen." And Jesus is saying, "Get behind me, Satan." Right after Peter proclaims that Jesus is the Son of God. So I say all that just to say that sometimes we get things wrong. Sometimes our perspective is pieces. And I've challenged y'all that Jesus is this whole package. All right? If you go to Sam's to get paper towels, can you buy a roll? No. You need a cart to haul your paper towels out. Right? Unless it's COVID. Then you can't find a roll. But it's the whole thing, right? You can't just tear the package open and grab one. If you're going to get paper towels at Sam's, you've got to get a crate of them, right? And so I want you to see that if you desire a relationship with Jesus, you got either you take him all or none. But you can't take the parts you like and leave the rest. So in modern day society, we've got a lot of different identities, if you will, for Jesus. A lot of different perspectives. I'm just going to go through a couple of them. I want you to think about your own walk. I want you to think about if this is where you're at. And I want us to be challenged this morning that if Jesus is what you desire in your life, it is a surrender to the fullness of who he is. Because a surrender to the fullness of who Jesus is a surrender to the fullness of who God is. We have heirloom Jesus in modern day society. Oh, Jesus was probably super important to great grandma, and over time in the history of her family, doesn't have the value that it had for great grandma, but there's still some value there. You know, it's. You know, I read a book years ago called Anchorman, and it's how to anchor your family in God for 100 years. And the whole idea is not to, you know, generationally move away. And that's what you see with heirloom Jesus. You see a lot of people that will identify themselves as Christians because that was what the message was in their family. But they have no direct relationship with Jesus. Jesus is just an heirloom in the family. Now, he was once utilized and used and spent time with, and now he's just a book on the shelf. that is just an heirloom in the family. We have politician Jesus. I like this one. We all like this one. Jesus doesn't belong to a party. Let me say that again. Jesus does not belong to a party. He's part of the body. He's the head of the body. I always thought in athletics in school, I always thought it was interesting, you know, sitting in a locker room before a basketball game and someone says a prayer and the pray for victory. And I used to think, I wonder how many Christians are in the other locker room praying for the same thing. Do we have more than they do? Does that trump them? Like if we have four and they have two, are we good? Jesus doesn't care if you win or lose basketball games. He cares who you are in the midst of a basketball game. He cares that you represent him. But so oftentimes we take Jesus and we place him in these places of I'm gonna leverage this for what? For me. Politicians all the time leverage Jesus for the Christian vote. Human beings leverage Jesus all the time, but they're leveraging him for themselves. Jesus is not a politician. One of my favorites is life insurance Jesus. I love the State Farm commercials. You know, where it's like a good neighbor, and then all of a sudden he's like, poof, he's there, right? I bet there's a lot of people in LA right now that would like an insurance agent, right? One that would just show up. But so oftentimes the insurance agent Jesus is the Jesus that we're only calling for when we're in the deepest crises of our lives. We're not interested. We'll pay our premiums to go to church periodically, but you know, we'll kick in our part. But the reality is we don't want him unless there's a crisis. But in a crisis, he's the only thing we want. Y'all hear that a little bit, right? Is this sounding at all familiar? Because I can testify that I've had the life insurance agent Jesus in my life. That I'm genuinely interested when crisis is there. I can remember when Lana and I had some damage on our home several years ago. Wow, was I grateful that I had insurance on it. But as soon as the insurance payout was done, it's back into the dark corner. It's back into the places that I no longer need it. And so oftentimes in our Christian walk, we have a tendency to need and desire Jesus in crisis. But if we're not in crisis, we're just going to move on with our life. And we have therapist Jesus. That's an interesting one. Everybody likes Jesus the Comforter, right? One of the names of Jesus is Comforter, but unfortunately so many times in our lives we have identified Jesus as Comforter, but that's just one edge of who he is. And so when I think about going to the doctor, if I tell the doctor, here's my symptoms, is anybody in here like Pepto-Bismol? I don't like that stuff. But when Kyle was little, we had a doctor that lived just on the other side of the fence from us. Anybody remember Home Improvement? The show Home Improvement? Some of y'all young people might not. He was our Wilson. All right? He was not quite as tall as the fence. So, you know, he would peek over. Lana would hand him food. Oh, he was single. Lana would hand him food over the fence. He was our Wilson. And we would hand Kyle over when Kyle was sick. So it was a good trade. We got some medical attention right over the fence, and he got food. It was a good deal. And I can remember one time Kyle getting really nauseous and sick, and I was like, man, they got some like kid Pepto, and he's like, nah, don't do that. Just let it run its course. All that stuff does is stop it from doing what the body is trying to flush out. And so oftentimes when we seek the therapy, Jesus, oftentimes we're not seeking solution, we're seeking remedy from our discomfort. Is anybody like remedy from your discomfort? Oftentimes, you know, Lana was sick last week, and I don't see her sick often, but when she sleeps in the bathroom floor, I know it's bad, right? And I'm sure she would have loved remedy from her discomfort. And the reality is, so many times in our lives, the Jesus that we seek, we're not seeking to be different and be changed. We're seeking to be comfortable. Oh, Jesus, I got this going on in my life, and I need, what I need from you is I need you to remove this from my life so that I can go back to the place that I've always enjoyed, which is the place of comfort. I don't want this obstacle in my existence. I don't want it in my path. It is challenging me too much. It's drawing me away from you. Oh, dear God, please give me comfort from this. Instead of praying, God, let me see your hand in the midst of this. I'm not praying for its removal. I'm praying that I can see you in it. But too many times in our life, too many times in modern Christianity, we have treated Jesus like the therapist of just give me comfort from the symptoms. And Jesus is saying, listen, the symptoms are sin, but I'm going to give you removal. In Mark, he says, it talks about him as the great physician. The doctor comes to help the sick. Jesus needs to be that for us in our existence, but unfortunately, we have treated everything, all these variations that I'm talking about this morning, the variation of being an insurance agent or an heirloom or a therapist, all of these variations are kind of pieces of who Jesus is, but the reality is they're just the pieces that we want, and we're only taking them on for our own benefit. We're not taking them on because we have declared, as Peter did, that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And so oftentimes we get confused with who we think Jesus is. The disciples spent 3 years chasing Jesus around trying to identify, who is this guy? Well, there's a place in Scripture where they're jockeying for position. The disciples are. Because they think he's going to be the next guy. The next guy, the next king, and they want to be right there. I mean, all of these variations over the life of Jesus, you see these disciples trying to figure out who Jesus is. The crazy thing is, we got this Bible that tells us who he is, and we're still trying to just piece him together like patchwork. And God is saying, listen, do you want redemption? Do you want righteousness? It's found in the fullness of my Son. You can't take a piece of him unless you're going to take the whole thing. So when Jesus asks this question, in the presence of evil, in the darkest corner of their world at the time, who do you say? The first question was, who do people say that I am? And it was Elijah, as a prophet. It was these variations again. And Peter comes up with the right answer, says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. But even though he had the right answer, he didn't understand the fullness of what that meant. Because the very next text, he's condemning Jesus for saying he's going to be crucified. When the reality is, the fullness of who Jesus is all the way through the crucifixion and the resurrection. So my challenge for us this morning is I would like for us as a body of believers to seek out the real Jesus, who has a variation of all of these different things, but he's not here to be just for you in your crisis. He's not here to be your comfort in the midst of struggle. He's here to reconcile you to his Father. He's here to bring you out of the flesh and into the Spirit. Yes, there's variations of all of these things wrapped up in Jesus, but it's not the fullness. Because if we miss the real Jesus and have a variation of who Jesus is, what are we missing? Missing the whole package. My challenge for us this morning. as we get into the Sermon on the Mount next week and start looking at the words of Jesus that are a high calling, I want to challenge us to seek out not a variation, not a shadow of who Jesus is, but the fullness of who he is, so that he can radically change your life, so that he can bring you to a place not just of comfort, but of solution of sin. He doesn't want to treat the symptoms of sin in your life. He wants to remove it. As I mentioned last week, on multiple occasions after Jesus healed somebody or protected somebody, he said, go and sin no more. I don't want to be a salve. Jesus is the solution. Jesus is the answer, but in his fullness, not in part. This morning, I want to challenge us to identify the real Jesus and not look at the variations that our modern society, no differently than their society, had variations of who Jesus was. Our society has created variations of who Jesus is too. And unfortunately, they've watered it down to be more presentable, to be more likable, to be more marketable, whatever the case may be. They've watered it down. We've watered it down. And I'm challenging us to bring it back into the forefront where Jesus belongs, in his fullness, as the sacrifice for us, as the payment of debt for our sinfulness. This morning, I want to challenge y'all, as Jason leads us in an invitation song, that if that's the Jesus you need and you've been missing because you've only been seeing a piece of or wanting a piece of who he is, my challenge is that you come forward as we stand and sing.
I once was lost in sin, but Jesus took me in. And then a little light from heaven filled my soul. It bathed my heart in love and wrote my name above. And just a little talk with Jesus made me whole. Now let us, let us He will hear our faintest cry, answer by and by. Now when you as your you will find a little talk with Jesus makes it right. Sometimes my past seems drear without a ray of cheer, and then a cloud of doubt may hide the light of day. The mist of sin may rise and hide the stormy skies, but just a little talk with Jesus clears the way. Let us He will hear our faintest cry, and he will answer by and by. Now when you feel a little prayer for you, as your you will find a little talk with Jesus makes it right. I may have doubts and fears, my eyes be filled with tears, but Jesus is a friend who watches day and night. I go to him in prayer, he knows my every care, and just a little talk with Jesus makes it right. Now let us have a little talk with Jesus. Let us tell him about our trouble. He will hear our faintest cry, and he will answer by and by. Now when you feel a little prayer for yearn, as your heart unto heaven is turned, you will find a little talk with Jesus makes it right.
If you would bow with me. Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you today and we thank you for all of us being able to gather here in this building, and we thank you for Kevin's willing and ability to present a lesson for us this morning, and we ask that you be with